Hello, this is your Sun Sounds volunteer broadcaster, Carol Hampton, bringing you this week's edition of Earth and Home. Today, we will be reading from Real Simple Magazine, October 2025, and Better Homes and Gardens, September 2025. Let's get started with Real Simple. How We Live, Advice, Inspiration, and a Little Peace of Mind. Away, the best souvenir I ever bought. Traveling is all about the memories and the unique treasures we pick up along the way. No shame in a kitschy magnet or t-shirt, but we asked frequent flyers to tell us about the meaningful objects they've scored on their adventures around the globe, as told to Melissa Matthews. I found a painting that brings me so much joy, Sarah Gallo, at the 5-Foot Traveler. When I visited Ranthambore National Park in India during a 2018 vacation with my mom and grandpa, I saw tigers in the wild for the first time. Just outside the park, I bought a close-up painting of a tiger from Village Women Crafts, a cooperative dedicated to empowering local artisans. From the moment I saw it, I was completely drawn to the tiger's eye. It felt magnetic. I grew up practicing martial arts and was always told to have tiger eyes, meaning a sharp, unwavering focus. At 30 by 20 inches, the painting was too large to fit in my bag. I travel carry-on only, which meant I had to roll the paper into a tube. Making things even more complicated, I wasn't headed home. The next leg of my trip was in Indonesia. So I asked my mom to fly home to Connecticut for 15 hours with the painting tucked between her legs. Today, that painting hangs in the center of my dining room, where I pass it multiple times a day. Tigers have always been my favorite animal. I cried when I finally saw them in person, and this painting takes me back to that moment. I got a statement necklace that gets people talking. Jackie Gifford at Jackie Giff. I love to buy from local vendors, and Charleston, South Carolina has a ton of small businesses. When I'm in town, I stop at a store called Ibu Movement because it champions small women's cooperatives from around the world, as far away as Kenya, Colombia, and India. The shop itself feels like a treasure chest, set above a tiny flight of steps in a building on King Street. Every time I buy a piece from Susan Hull Walker, the founder, I feel like I'm walking away with a story and also supporting great craftsmanship. The last time I was there, I bought a pink cloth necklace made in India, featuring a series of beads with multiple strands. It's a statement piece to wear with a summer dress or white blouse. It's also lightweight, so it's easy to slip into my suitcase. I bring it on business trips, which I go on often as the editor-in-chief of Travel Plus Leisure, because it instantly sparks conversation. My husband and I collect pottery as a way to carry on his parents' tradition and honor his late dad. I love to buy small ceramic vases and pitchers whenever I travel. My in-laws started this tradition, and my husband and I decided to carry it on when we went on our first trip together to Prince Edward Island in Canada back in 2002. We always look for a local pottery or art shop that has information about the pieces and the artists. On each trip, we pick our souvenir based on the size and how well it represents the destination. That first piece was a miniature pitcher. We chose it because it was made using the red clay that the area is known for. The challenge with this type of souvenir is getting it home. I typically wrap the piece in a sock for cushioning and place it in my shoe, or I simply put it in my backpack. So far, nothing has broken. The tradition is a nice reminder of my father-in-law, who is no longer with us. I bought a scarf that still gives me the warm fuzzies. Nicole Coeto at the Cuban Carry. I usually try to avoid making purchases that require me to find room in my luggage because I live by the philosophy, travel light, travel further. When I do buy things, I make sure they're wearable on the flight home, which brings me to this wool scarf that can be worn multiple ways. It's a scarf, a shawl, and a hood. I got it during a girls' trip to Helsinki last year while shopping at a Christmas market. It caught my eye because it just looked so elegant, soft, and a beautiful cream color. The booth was run by a father-daughter duo. The daughter said her father had been in the business for 40 years. I love supporting small businesses, and this scarf is special because it reminds me of the trip with one of my best friends. Plus, it keeps me warm and fashionable when I travel to cold places. I loaded up on honey with a meaningful story, Marissa Strang, at marissa.daily. One of the best things I've ever picked up while traveling is honey from a small shop called Tenacious Bee Collective in India. I found it at a pop-up market last October. The moment I tasted it, I was set on bringing some home. What drew me in wasn't just the flavor, but also the story behind the honey. I met the owners who told me about building the business and ethical honey farming. I also met a woman from the team who had left her village for the very first time to come to the market and showcase how they make their honey and candles. Supporting something so local and purpose-driven felt important, so I knew I'd make room in my suitcase for the 4-pack no matter what. That concludes the best souvenir I ever bought. Next is Modern Manners, Advice for Your Social Dilemmas by Jenna Bush Hager and Justin Sylvester. Deborah asks, a very good friend vapes in my house and car constantly. I've complained about the smell, but all she did was change the scent. It's most annoying when she's right by my ear and constantly dragging on the vape. It hardly leaves her mouth. Now that I've tolerated it for so long, I feel like it would be mean to say something, but it gives me a headache. What can I do? Justin Sylvester. It's never too late to speak up for yourself when you're feeling uncomfortable. If I were in your position, I would take your friend aside and let her know that you do not appreciate her vaping so close to you. You can explain that it gives you headaches and affects your health, and that you simply don't like it. One of those reasons alone is enough to ask for a change. Jenna Bush Hager. Because it's happening in your house and your car, you absolutely have the right to set boundaries. You could kindly ask your friend to vape outside when she's around you. Let her know that you've gone along with it for a while because you care about her, but it's really starting to affect you. That honestly shows your love and respect for her while also respecting your own needs. J.S. If your friend refuses to stop or doesn't take your concern seriously, you get to decide if she's worth spending time with under those circumstances. And if not, you can let her know, gently but firmly, that she should use her own car or spend time at her own home instead. About Jenna and Friends. Jenna and Friends airs on weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Tune in to NBC to catch Jenna with a rotating cast of guest hosts. Her fellow dilemma solvers in Real Simple will change too. This time it's Justin Sylvester, an E! News co-host, a frequent co-host on Today, and the brilliant podcaster behind Yestergays. Kim asks, I've gone to the same nail salon for a couple of years, and the owner does my nails. While she was on vacation, I had an appointment with a different lady. I really liked her technique, and the results were so much better. How do I switch without putting the new lady in an uncomfortable position or hurting the owner's feelings? JBH, well, this is a social dilemma for the ages. JS, in my opinion, you really can't make the switch easily without potentially hurting some feelings. JBH, I disagree. If you are paying for a service and prefer the results from the other technician, then you have every right to switch. It's your money and your choice. Your regular person owns the salon, so she's still making money from it. Everyone involved is an adult, and you can be honest. You could tell her that you discovered you love the other woman's style and would prefer to book with her going forward. J.S. I used to work at a hair salon, so I know the politics and the egos behind the scenes. In that world, and I imagine in nail salons too, someone would likely end up feeling hurt. If you really want to see the new technician, you should find out what days the owner doesn't work and book your appointment during that time. You can even pay in cash to keep things discreet. LC asks, I have a friend who has very long hair, about to her chest. I mostly see her wearing it with a pin or beret holding the top back. It's all one length. She is an attractive woman, and I know she would look so great with a fresh and modern haircut with some layers. She could still keep it long. We're not the closest of friends, but we share a lot. How do I suggest a new look? JBH, honestly, I don't think you can. Unlike in The Princess Diaries or Clueless, you can't just give people unsolicited makeovers in real life. JS, don't tell that to a gay, because we don't believe that. What you can do is wait for her to compliment your hair, and then you can suggest your stylist. Maybe the professional could suggest a few layers to her. That way, the idea is planted without anyone being pushy. JBH, I do think that if she directly asks for your opinion or hair advice, then it's completely fine to offer some suggestions. But unless she brings it up first, I would avoid initiating that kind of conversation. JS, wouldn't it be so much fun if we could just go around giving everyone makeovers, though? Kelsey asks, my neighborhood's houses are all very close together, cottage style, and two of my neighbors like to walk through our patio to get to another neighbor's house rather than walking on the sidewalk or access road. We recently put up cameras and now have video evidence of them walking through every week, which is even more than we thought. Should I bring it up and ask them to stop or just let it be to keep the peace? We don't have an HOA to oversee these things. JS, you've got to keep the peace. JBH, I agree. In this case, I would let it go. They're not damaging your property or doing anything malicious. They're just walking through. If you trust and like them as neighbors, then I would ask, how much does this really affect you? JS, as soon as you bring it up, it's probably going to create tension, and no one likes tension in the neighborhood. It only makes for mess and drama. JBH, exactly. There's a reason we all watched Desperate Housewives. JS, also, I watch a lot of Dateline, and let me tell you, it always starts with the neighbor crossing the yard. Have an etiquette question? To submit your question for Jenna and a friend, email them at modernmanners@realsimple.com. That concludes Modern Manners, Advice for Your Social Dilemmas. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is Earth and Home, and I am your volunteer broadcaster, Carol Hampton. Let's move on to the next article. First person, what it feels like to be diagnosed with breast cancer. Singer-songwriter Tracy Bonham got the call no one wants to receive on a Friday night. Here's how she took the news and everything that followed, as told to Lisa Friedman. Looking back, I guess I knew something was wrong. I'd actually felt a little lump about a year and a half earlier. It was really hard to find, and I didn't flag it because it never showed up on mammograms. As so many women have been told, I have dense breasts. There are a lot of benign cysts in there, and you can feel them, so I didn't think anything of it. But there I was, in 2024, wrapping up a terrible divorce. I was on my ex-husband's insurance. I needed to see as many doctors as I could before it was cut off. I had also been pretty sick with a lot of intestinal stuff, a wild bout of colitis, and then this infection called Helicobacter pylori. Just awful stuff that caused me to lose about 14 pounds in 2 months. I was so tired of all the doctors. I had my regular mammogram coming up, but I needed a break. I called to reschedule, and the woman on the phone asked if there had been any changes. Normally, I would say no. I don't know what made me say yes. I just had this mentality of being super thorough. I figured this was my time to speak up. I felt so stupid saying it, though. I trusted the previous mammograms. To my surprise, the woman said I'd need a referral for a diagnostic mammogram. I didn't even know what that was. It's a more detailed X-ray. My first reaction, I didn't want to bother my doctor with this paperwork. She's busy. I eventually realized that was a silly concern women often have, and I called to bother her. I scheduled the special mammogram, but I wasn't freaked out. I was just like, okay, we're doing this. Let's go check it out. I went into get-it-done mode, figuring it was probably nothing. After that, it took a while to get the results. I was checking the portal regularly and wasn't seeing anything, and that started to frustrate me. I emailed my doctor and made phone calls. They'd say the lab needed to talk to the doctor, and the doctor needed to talk to the lab again. It was a lot of back and forth. I think it went on for 2 weeks, which is an eternity when you're waiting, and it was January, which we all know is the worst month. Then, on a Friday night, I was with my boyfriend, Renee. His mother and her friend were visiting from out of town, and we were about to go to dinner when I got a phone call. I recognized the area code and knew it was the doctor. Oddly, I didn't have a pit in my stomach at all. I answered robotically. She said, "Hi, I hate to be giving you this news." I froze. I just stood still. She said, "We don't have the full pathology report. I'm sorry to tell you this, but you have invasive carcinoma." At that moment, I went into another plane of existence. It was not panic. It was not a freakout. I've been told I'm very good in a crisis, not so much with the small stuff. This was proof. I hung up and went to the dining room where Renee's mother, who I love, was sitting with her friend. I had an open mouth and I looked at them with shock on my face. I said, "That was the doctor. She just told me I have breast cancer." They were so present, so calm. They asked me some questions. I told them I didn't really have any more information. Renee's mom is a breast cancer survivor, so I felt a lot of comfort from her. I wouldn't know if it was stage 1 or 4 until later. Still, it never crossed my mind that I could die. I was looking at someone who had beaten this. My own mom is also a survivor. I went downstairs to tell Renee. I'm still kind of amazed at the strength I somehow conjured. We sat down on the couch, and I held his hand, and I just said it so matter-of-factly. From this different plane, like I was being held by the universe, I was stepping up to a place where I wish I could exist all the time, honestly, where I was very present, very okay with what was happening, not in self-pity mode at all. We still went to dinner. We made a toast to living our best lives, and though the meal is a bit of a blur, I remember that it was almost beautiful. I wrote this in my journal that week while I waited for my follow-up. I haven't gotten the pathology report, so I don't know the severity of my situation yet. Regardless, I know I am one of a million women with a new breast cancer diagnosis. This is nothing new at all, unfortunately. How many women have new diagnoses? How many people are wondering if they might be next? I told myself I wouldn't worry until there was something worth worrying about. I still had my 13-year-old son to tell, but I didn't want to burden him until I had more information. So it was business as usual that week. I'd pack his lunches, get him to school, make dinner. A week after the call, I went in to see the doctor, and she had the full report. Lobular breast cancer. She got out her pen and paper and started drawing what it looks like, and she was like, "Good news, stage 1. She gave me the growth rate, 18%, so it was growing, but it wasn't off the charts. She then started talking about the different drugs we'd explore. It was a weird thing. I was almost like, oh, stage 1 is boring. It doesn't make any sense. It's not a rational thought. I did not want it to be any worse. The thought was probably due to an endorphin high or whatever it is when you're in shock, and possibly some ugly part of my ego that wanted a story to tell. Mostly, I had a feeling of, it'll be fine. I'm a trooper. My best friend had just been diagnosed with stage 4, and this was not that. I knew my odds looked good. There was a moment when I did break down. Around 2 weeks in, I was lying in bed with my boyfriend and I said, "Wait a minute, my body has something malignant in it, and that's not okay, and this makes me mad. And why do I have to deal with this?" I had an angry cry. It was not fair. I come from a long line of women who hold too much stuff in, and I always had this story in my head that I would eventually make myself sick. This, I decided, was the reckoning. My doctor and I came up with a plan. It meant more testing and more waiting. I was 57 years old, so before they decided what drugs to give me, they wanted to do a bone density scan because the meds could deplete bone mass. The waiting was tricky. I was thinking about that 18% growth rate and what it meant. I wanted to get this thing out of me as soon as possible. Finally, we scheduled the surgery, and that's when I told my son. His body tightened, his eyes bulged. but he was a champ, and I reassured him that we had caught it early. I feel so fortunate to be able to say that it's out. My surgeon was tremendous and got it all. I had a lumpectomy and a lymphadenectomy, and all margins were clear. I went through 4 weeks of radiation and now take a tiny pill each day. I actually got a bunch of beautiful stickers to put on my new pill bottle each month. Looking at something very beautiful and pleasant instead of that icky orange plastic while taking this cancer medicine is my way of trying to change the story. My promise to myself is that every time I take a pill for the next few years, I will lift it up to the sky like, "We've got this," and make a little ceremony out of it. My son recently asked me if I still had cancer. I'd heard that if you clear the 5-year mark, that's when you can say you're officially cancer-free. There was no way I could have explained this to him without upsetting him, and once again I figured there was no reason to worry about something that's just a concept. So even though it's been less than a year, no, I don't have cancer. I do secretly worry about it coming back. My best friend with the stage 4 diagnosis had the same thing I had 15 years ago. They put her on the meds for 10 years and she finished them. It was gone and then it came back aggressively. That's scary. I don't like that story, even though she's responding to her new treatment so well that the doctors gave her the title, "No Evidence of Disease." She is a miracle. Part of me still thinks I should work on the communication and not let things fester. If I get real anxious about something, I worry I'm going to rot myself from the inside out. It's always on my mind. Also on my mind, I'm working on trusting my gut more. If I had just done the normal mammogram, like all the others, they wouldn't have seen this growth. It was underneath the cyst, and it would have grown, and then it would have been stage 2 or stage 3. I remind myself every day that my gut knows exactly what it's doing. That concludes what it feels like to be diagnosed with breast cancer. Now we'll move on to an article from Better Homes and Gardens. Into the woods, high up in California's San Bernardino Mountains, a pair of creatives recast a cabin in the trees with cosmopolitan edge. Forest bathing never looked so good. A high-low mix that incorporates thrifted objects, vintage pieces, and well-loved items from their previous homes hints at the creative lives of owners Alexis Borgs and Ben Anderson. Murano glass pendants hang over the honed marble dining table. Bold trim pops against the verdant backdrop. Ben Anderson and Alexis Borgs love a project. On the very first night in their weekend home, a 3-level cabin built in 1984, Alexis knocked out a wall to improve the view of the San Bernardino Mountains below. A few weeks later, Ben had the doors of the kitchen cabinets scattered across the floor for a midnight paint session. And when the former partners turned friends, found a set of brutalist chairs on the side of the road, there was no question that Ben would recane the backs and seats himself. Still, they knew when to leave well enough alone. We saw at least 30 houses, and there wasn't another one like this in terms of look and feel, and the position of the window, says Ben, a ceramics artist based in Northern California, who also manages an arts nonprofit. It's a totally custom home, so we approached it with the idea of what we could add to complement the house versus taking away. That meant embracing the earthy wood panel walls that dominated most rooms, maintaining the plank vaulted ceilings, and celebrating the individually acid-washed tiles that were original to the vanity and shower area in the primary bathroom. "We couldn't possibly touch that," Alexis says. "We wanted to make sure the integrity of the house was intact. To do that while putting their own stamp on the place, the pair took a do-it-yourself approach, infusing the home with what Ben calls a controlled maximalism. They incorporated vintage pieces reclaimed from previous homes, colorful objects found on their travels, and bold artwork made by friends and Alexis himself, who is the West Coast president of Next Model Management and is also opening an artist retreat in the area. When they needed to break up the large expanses of the wood-clad interior, such as the stair railings and the kitchen walls and cabinetry, paint proved a valuable tool. "There's a lot of wood paneling, so we had to make some adjustments," Ben says. There were moments when we needed some differentiation to brighten up and amp up the cleanness. The resulting mix, including furnishings that soften the architecture's rough edges, gives the house a bohemian sophistication that's both funky and refined. In the second floor media room, for example, a leopard print trunk from Indonesia doubles as a coffee table next to a pair of floral armchairs found at the Rose Bowl flea market. Meanwhile, the bedrooms lean into a cozy cabin aesthetic with colorful boiled wool blankets that recall summer camp stripes. The pair treat the house like an evolving canvas as they experiment and incorporate things they love. People get places set and they stay that way, but this house changes constantly, Ben says. It's all quite eclectic, but it feels very appropriate to the house. There's a sophisticated lodge feel, Alexis says. It really feels like the home hugs you. Blue accents, including the painted stair railing, break up the wood tones in the dining room. Outside, a ponderosa pine grows through the roof of the porte cochere, setting the house in the trees. It was one of the first things we noticed in photos of the listing, says Ben. A red bar stool recalls one Ben perched on his late grandmother's kitchen. Painting lower cabinets in Sierra Knight and upper cabinets in Vanilla, both by Pratt and Lambert, helped modernize the kitchen, while a brass and milk glass pendant channels the past. Sleek finishes. The chrome bed frame, lucite bedside table, and luxe vintage rug modernize rustic wood panel walls in the primary bedroom. In the second bedroom, an upholstered bed piled high with pillows, wall-to-wall carpeting, and a cushioned window seat overlooking the trees creates a comfy retreat. The river rock fireplace adds warmth. In the primary bathroom, the existing solid brass fixtures and custom handmade tiles dial up the nostalgia, especially thanks to the addition of a moody portrait series of David Bowie. That concludes the article, Into the Woods. If you missed any part of this program or are interested in another program, check out our on-demand menu on sunsounds.org. We are at the conclusion of this week's Earth and Home program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Carol Hampton. Thank you for tuning in this week. Join me next time for another new and informative program. Have a great week and stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.